we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and I got to tell you, you hear that kind of thing from Rich. And we've had that. We've had very similar conversations with Tony, obviously, over the years. But if that doesn't give you a absolute window into as finite a career world as there is, I mean, you know, there's only a few hundred. It's only a few hundred jocks plying this trade at any one time. And, you know, we talk about the riders in the afternoon. It's a little unfair because, you know, the riders that make it possible for horses to compete in the afternoon, for all of this to happen, that never get a chance to ride in the afternoon, they're contributing as well. And there's plenty of those riders that have to make weight and, you know, do the things that, you know, I mean, they ideally would love to compete in the afternoon, but that kind of conversation, and you know, Rich and I don't text Rich in the morning and say, let's discuss this today. It's just, you know, it's from the heart, and you're going to have a different kind of conversation from the heart with one of the most consistently successful owners that I know. Steve Lehman joins us, and one of the really pleasant parts of Breeders' Cup weekend for me was I think I was one of the first people to congratulate John Green when he came into the winner's circle for Wonder Wheel. He said I was, and I think I was up there on Steve Lehman's list of first people to congratulate him when Goodnight Olive won the filly and mare sprint to start the Saturday action. Steve, welcome back. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. I believe you were the first. I told my son standing next to me, I said, if she gets here where we were sitting and, you know, leading the race, I really don't think they'll catch her. And I had a moment where I just started walking. I started walking down the steps, and it's unusual for me to be that confident. Yeah, and so I was having a moment there by myself and enjoying watching her come back, and you were the first to congratulate me, so I'll always remember that.
I love it, and you know, obviously, I mean, one of the trite questions I could ask is, does this ever get old? We know the answer, but how does it change, and how does having big horses you know, how does it change your approach? I mean, some people get spoiled and start to interfere with their operation and with their trainer and with their agents if they have a bloodstock agent. Talk about that part of it, Steve, for you, and how having, you know, another Breeders' Cup horse like this, you know, how it affects you.
Well, first, Steve, it's just a blessing, you know, to come across these horses and put together a team. There's so many parts to this, as you well know, as an owner. It's just difficult to keep these horses well. The good ones, as you know, seem to always have problems because they always try. They're mentally so strong and want to perform, just like the good athletes. But, you know, what I kept telling my partners before the race, I said, I was lucky, as you all know, I was lucky enough. There's six of us that make up First Row Partners. And I kept telling them, I said, slow this down. I said, just slow this down. When we won this with Day at the Spa in 2014, it went so fast. I said, just slow it down. Well, guess what? Didn't work. It just went so fast. I mean, it just happened so fast. Everybody's so excited. You know, I'm trying to invite people into this game. Anyone I see that's a friend, I say, if we get lucky, come to the Winner's Circle. And boy, did we have a celebration in that Winner's Circle.
Big time. In fact, yesterday, driving back from Rochester, Tina was driving, and I had all my – I was kind of going through my photos from Breeders' Cup, and one of the – I have to send it to you. One of the nice photos I got was you guys leading Goodnight Olive into the Winner's Circle. And, Irad is as animated as I think I ever see him You know, for whatever reason, you could tell that he was delighted, and you know, it's always an infectious scenario.
It is. And again, it happened so fast. And Irad has told me he feels like this filly is just so talented, and he just, you know, it's such a thrill for the guys on the big stage to get excited as well. Even Chad, you know, he puts on that trainer demeanor, but you know. Behind the scenes, he was Sunday morning. I had a nice time with him, just the two of us at the barn, and you know, he kind of lets his hair down a little bit, and you know, shared with me just how important this was for him.
Well, and honestly, you know, not to belabor what was a arduous, you know, few days, and then even subsequently, you know, Sunday to have to then, you know, worry and monitor domestic spending. I mean, this was a challenging Breeders' Cup for Chad, and undoubtedly frustrating. And even the lead up, even ahead of Breeders' Cup, there was the Dolce Zell difficulty and the loggerheads with the regulatory vets, the Jack Christopher frustration. So this was probably a really gratifying when you say Sunday morning and everybody's exhausted, Steve. I mean, the barn, everybody in the barn has put so much into it, especially when you have that many horses involved. And so, you know, having to keep your guard up all the time, as Chad, you know, there's a lot to ask.
It is a lot to ask. And, you know, I heard a term you used that I'd never thought about, the racing, and you called it the traveling circus. And they were packing up Sunday morning, getting ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, that's what it is. It's the term you use. But we've been so fortunate with this filly, Steve. She just we had a plan, and I was actually in Saratoga in June for a 2-year makeup on a Doobie Brothers concert with my wife. It was her Christmas present from 2 years ago, and I went watching Chad train like I do a lot of mornings in Saratoga, and I said you have a plan for this filly, and he said, I'd like to go win this allowance race in June, come back in the shine again, and then go to the Ballerina. And I said, same plan I have. Well, one of my partners called me Sunday after the race and said, you're off 3 days. And I said, why is that? He said, we had to go to the allowance race because the shine again didn't fill. So I felt like with this filly, to have a plan and to come through the Ballerina, then to give her purposely the time, the 10 weeks into the Breeders' Cup, Chad had her so well prepared. It was an amazing job. I was lucky enough to be there and see three of her last four breezes in Lexington. I drove up a few times from North Carolina just to spend some time with our son who lives there, and it was just amazing to watch this filly train so well. His team executes a plan so well that she was very, very well prepared for the race.
The And just looking, going back to the purchase, and Liz Crow bought this horse, right?
Yes, absolutely. She's Stone Street bred. She was consigned by Summerfield, Francis, and Barbara Van Langenbach, sure. And Liz picked her out. And actually what happened is we were on this filly, and Jay Hanley called Liz, and he said, I want you to look at this filly for me. And Liz said, I have somebody on this filly. So Jay and I have known each other for 10 years through Chad's Barn or so, and this was the first horse that Jay took part of, First Row Partners, and now we've continued to do that. We have a few more now. So Jay's a wonderful partner. He has a small group that he manages, like a small group that I manage, and it's just been, with this being the first one,
unbelievable.
It's obviously just been a beautiful ride.
Well, and you know, Jay's been on and has had, again, consistent success. We'll talk more about the specific win and what's gone on here, because this is now a, you know, two-time Grade 1 winning filly. You mentioned the Ballerina, so, back-to-back wins in Grade 1s. And she was a $170,000 purchase, which, fairly early, actually, too. Phasig. It was not at Keeneland.
Right, it was at Phasig. That's correct. Phasig October.
$170,000, which frankly, after the market we just saw, it feels like a tremendous bargain, right?
I shopped the September sale at Keeneland, and I've tried to go to the well again. I kept asking Liz, am I doing the wrong thing? Because I was working the sale with Liz, Steve, and I came upon a Ghost Zapper filly, bred by Stone Street, consigned by Barbara and Francis Van Langenbach in Summerfield. I said, should I do this again? Well, we had to pay about twice as much for this one.
Well, that's exactly where we are. And we'll talk about that with John Sakura in a little bit. She's a Go Zapper, Hillendale, one of the five Hillendale wins out of the 14 races, and out of a Smart Strike mare, Salty Strike. Good night, Alan.
I actually went out to see Ghost Zapper. I wanted to see, look at the stallions. And if you haven't been out to Hillendale, John Sakura has done a magical job with this place. I was fortunate enough to be there. Gosh, it probably goes back, Steve, 12, 15 years. A deceased friend of mine named Larry Richardson took over that farm for a gentleman and started working on that farm. And you could see what was there. And that farm is just gorgeous. It has to be the most beautiful property in that area.
Wow.
But I went out to see Ghost Zapper, and I sent my son a photograph, and I didn't even put a title, anything to it. And I sent the picture. He texted me immediately back, and he said, boy, Chad's right, Dad. She sure does look like her dad. And that seems to be the perfect offspring from Ghost Zapper, from Talent. But the ankles, hopefully, we've got under control now, Chad. And gosh, Dr. Bramlage over at Rude and Riddle, the last time his words were to me, he said, Steve, I believe I have her fixed. And boy, he's been spot on. He's such a wonderful surgeon to take care of these animals as he does.
Take us back, Steve, to the complete picture. And when you win a race like this, and you have quiet moments, or when you're traveling, or when the adrenaline trickles away, and now it is a week and a couple of days. You have to think about the journey that you're enjoying. I mean, and talk about, for the benefit of people trying to get into the game, trying to find a day at the spa and a good night olive and several. I mean, we haven't even talked about some of the other good horses that your name has been on the ownership line. But talk about the ups and downs, and the things that you realize now, or you realized afterward, were mistakes along the way, and how to avoid the pitfalls. What makes for a successful journey in the game as an owner?
Steve, it's tough. You do buy. I continue. Liz Crow's had wonderful success, but I always tease her and say, Liz, you're still going to buy more bad horses than good horses. But you just hope these good horses come along often enough to keep partners interested, to keep yourself interested. But you're right, the drive home from Lexington went pretty fast, 6 hours to get back to North Carolina. But you do some reflection. I was there for a few days after, and you think about people that I've said something for years, horses take you places you would never go and meet people you would never meet. And it's just such a wonderful experience. But you do have pitfalls. But for people new into the business, you know, surround yourself with good people. You can't know it all. You know, you have to have a good agent that you know and trust. You know, there's agents in this game that want to make one sale and move on. Liz has been so good to continue to, you know, help follow our horses. And she's always there if I need something or a question for advice. And even though she's young, she's very well experienced. You know, Chad, I go back with Chad to the days of Frankel. I was my regular partner for a long time, John Eaton, and I bought a horse in France. And we sent to Frankel and ended up in Chad's care in Florida. And I got to know Chad, and you could just tell his intensity, his knowledge, his commitment. I mean, it's 24/7 for him. And you could just see he was going to be successful. You could see the drive. And so you just have to surround yourself, I think, with the right people. You know, surround yourself with good partners. You know as well as I, Steve, there's partnerships that fail. And this group that I formed with First Row Partners I was actually running two separate partnerships. I had one with a guy from San Francisco named Will Robbins, who's a Kentuckian bred and born through and through. And my other partner, main partner, Marty Scheinman, has sat beside me for 15 years at Saratoga and adjacent boxes. And he leaned over to me about 5 years ago and said, I want to do horses with you. And so First Row Partners was created right on the First Row of Saratoga. And that's how we started. So I brought those two partnerships together. We had other partners of mine that I've had. And like I said, there's now six of us. And we've just locked up that partnership. And it's just been, you know, it's just been great. We've had success, Steve, just beyond recognition. That was our sixth greatest stakes win in 4 years of racing. I tell them it's not supposed to happen. But we buy numbers that are not terrifically large. But I try to buy quality. And I use Liz and other people. I'm an information guy. I love getting information. I go back and do the research. I talk to the breeders, try to find out where the horse was raised, because we typically buy 4 to 5 horses a year. But but as I said in the post-race interview, there's one common thread between Day at the Spa and Goodnight Olive, and that's the trainer, Chad Brown. He keeps his team together like I try to keep my partners together. You know, he has his the exercise riders he keeps, like Walter, the exercise rider for Goodnight Olive, I think he's been with Chad 10, 12 years. And that's just so valuable. There's such the exercise riders, as I heard you speak earlier when Richard was speaking, that these guys have a tough life, but they're so committed to being successful. And so every part of this is so valuable to the success of what we get to see as owners.
If you were to single out a misstep along the way with the benefit of, you know, of hindsight, what might have
been lots. You know, I would say probably I look at a horse that I bought a couple years ago, a 2-year-old sale. I probably spent too much money. You know, I try to stay in a range. You know, my plan, and I wrote a business plan before I started this, and my business plan was to buy fillies only. You know, the home runs hit when you buy a colt, but I buy fillies only. I try to buy something with a little bit of pedigree that we have a mare on the farm now that didn't make it to the racetrack, and we're going to try to breed her. You know, we have bred her and trying to, you know, make up the error that I made there and buying one that was not successful at the racetrack. So that's the business plan for us, but that's probably the biggest pitfall. I try to buy in the, you know, I try not to spend more than $400,000 on a yearling or a 2-year-old. That's just kind of my threshold. And the reason that is because you have to go win a graded stakes race to be able to resell that horse at the price. So I try to have a business plan, Steve. It's not, obviously there's lots of fun involved when you're successful, but I always try to run this as a business. You know, people with, you know, as I heard Bobby Flay once say, I compete with people that own countries. And I love that line because that's so true, because I know what he's talking about. But, you know, could we go raise $1 million and buy a horse? Yes, but I just don't think it's the right thing to do in the business model that I try to keep. I look back at the Breeders' Cup winners. My son totaled this up for me. He said, look, Dad, Godolphin won 4, Coolmore won 3, the Qataris 1-1, Judmont 1-1, Shadwell 1-1, and then Mike Rapoli 1-1, you know, big, really big, big outfits. And he said, here comes along First Row Partners and Team Hanley, and we, you know, we scratched, we made one. So that's what you're competing against. So it does make it difficult, but, you know, it's spending the money properly is the way I try to achieve it. Because one of my partners says, well, you should have bought that horse. You should have bought that horse. And you're going to miss a good horse, but, you know, still in this game, you're going to, as I tell Liz, you're going to buy more bad horses than good horses, but you need to have a plan.
The budget, from the budget side of things, because this is, you know, this is something that everybody is finding themselves stretching, just based on, you know, based on the dearness, you know, of quote unquote the good horses. How you know, how is that merchandised to the partners? And, you know, I imagine, you know, these are people that have got business savvy, and so they understand, I mean, the supply and demand portion. But how has that changed over the last, you know, let's say 10 years?
It has changed, Steve. It's, you know, we bought Day at the Spa for $85,000. You can't do that now. I mean, those kind just, you just can't do that anymore. It's just the prices. A part of it, Steve, is the crop size. You know, I've been doing this, seriously, I've been doing this for about the last 10, 12 years, and the crop size continues to shrink. You know, when I look back 20 years ago, the crop size was 30,000. Now you're looking at a crop size of 20,000. It's just like when I go to the sale, I cut the book in half immediately when I'm only going to buy fillies. And, you know, that really shrinks it up. And then, you know, Liz eliminates a lot of horses for me with her team when we look at the yearling sales or the two-year-old sales. And so the number we choose from last year I bought two horses for us, and that was it. But typically we try to buy, you know, four or five a year. And, you know, with our success, you know, I have a lot of folks asked to join, but I try to be selective and keep the numbers down. But it does make it more difficult because of the shrinking crop size and the higher level. There seems to be more separation in the market. You know, when you go to a sale, it seems like a lot of folks end up on the same horses, and that does make it difficult. And that's what drives up the price, because folks are willing to spend an extra $50,000 to purchase a horse. We were lucky enough to own a horse named Nay Lady Nay, who was a grade two winner a few years back. And her, I was partnered with Hiddenbrook Farm. My good friend Dan Hall and I partnered together. And we had a number set for her at $200,000. Well, I bid $190,000. Next thing I knew, someone bid $200,000. Dan nudged me and said, go one more. And because of that extra nudge, we bought her for $210,000. And, you know, we were lucky enough to sell her last year for $1.7 million. So those kind of nudges were just plain out good luck that I was standing beside partnering with the right guy.
Well,
I try to be very disciplined at this. You know, I try not to go past the number, but sometimes when you feel like you're on the right horse, you have to maybe go through your budget just slightly and explain to your partners. Unfortunately, my partners are so generous. All it takes is a phone call and an explanation, and they're right there for me.
Well, and Day at the Spa, for instance, you know, Day at the Spa, what, 2 point something when she sold?
Yeah, she sold for 2.1 million. She earned $2 million on a track, and we sold her 2.1 million. Yeah. So again, those kind, you have to have some like that, Steve, to keep yourself in the game. I mean, it's, you know, I try to run this as a business, and it's difficult, but you have to have a big horse every so often to do that.
Well, you've been having a big horse on a regular basis, and you know, one of the people that it's so easy to congratulate and you know, be happy and excited for. Steve Lehman, congratulations again, and continued success.
Thank you, Steve. That means a lot. You keep up the good work as well. It's so nice to hear stories that you wouldn't hear otherwise. I'm a story guy. I loved it. My first trainer was a guy named Jimmy Picou, and I just used to love to listen to these stories. And he just, the Mr. Hooper stories and the stories that Tony Black tells and the stories that Richard McGillory tells, those are just priceless.
Wow, and Jimmy Picou, I didn't realize that you started with Jimmy. Ah, I love it.
Yeah.
Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. Keep up the good work.
I'll do my best. Steve Lehman, everybody. And, boy, Steve has just had a consistent success. And that's what everybody is trying to, you know, the work you put in, ideally, is to generate, you know, that kind of high level success. And as you heard from Steve Lehman, his lauding of Alapa and the Hill and Dale team, and John Sikora joins us. John, good morning.
Morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm great. And last week, of course, at the sale, which continues through Wednesday, you were under the gun, so we couldn't talk. But there was no way that we were not having this visit on the heels of Curlin creating a seemingly impossible precedent. Three winners in the Breeders' Cup, plus Go Sapper and Violence. John, some very heady results.
It was a great weekend of results. You know, you always hope to shine on racing's biggest day, but all credit to the stallions and people that have supported our horses, and very, very rewarding. It was almost an embarrassment of riches. I was thinking for a minute, if you could just parse that out over a couple of seasons, it would have been a great year. But to have three in a row, and, you know, Curlin to have almost a certainty to have at least two, if not three, champions in the same year, and back-to-back three-year-old filly champions. I think it was done in like 1970 with Deputy Minister or something like that, and only been done two or three times in history. I think Reviewer did it with Ruffian and Revidare. I think there was maybe one other example, but very, very unique, and three in the same day has never been done before. And you know, it sort of validates the slogan that we've tried to have for the horse, which I think is the most appropriate, is, you know, the classic sire. And not to discredit her, I really don't do comparison ads like some people, but I think the facts are that if you want to win a classic race, Curlin is your best chance to win a classic race. And, you know, that's what we all dream about, Breeders' Cup Classics and Oaks and you know, Kentucky Derby and those kind of races. So, he's just a wonderful example of a great classic sire, you know, much like AP Indy and some of the throwback horses in the past. And, you know, you get today horses breeding huge volumes of mares and lots of stakes winners, but by percentage and numbers of grade one winners, I think this will be second year in a row that he's led North America in numbers of grade one winners and grade one wins. And so that's, you know, those are Super Bowl events. And so it's credit to the horse and everybody that supported him. And it's been a great journey from where he started to where he is. And, you know, let's long may it continue.
Well, and John, one of the things about just the Breeders' Cup performance, I mean, let alone other results, the fact that he got a sprint winner, the dirt mile, you know, the two-turn dirt mile winner, and the, you know, 9 furlong distaff winner, that's a story in itself. I mean, basically, you know, covering from 6 furlongs to 9, that part of it is amazing. And if you want to fold in Go Sapper's result and Violence's winner in the juvenile, I mean, it basically speaks to virtually every kind of requirement that breeders would want: the precocity and longevity and consistency, speed over a route of ground.
Yeah, I mean, the performance I believe is sort of without deficit. You know, the reality today, though, is that there are few people that breed to race. There's few people that breed a horse with the intention of winning an important race. It's sales averages and how they sell and who are the sale toppers. And you know, that's really a predominant factor in breeders' decisions. But, you know, fortunately, all horses you mentioned have had huge sales successes as well as racetrack successes. And, you know, I really don't really have much to add. The results speak for themselves. They're very successful. Breeders' Cup day, you know, and that's always the goal of, you know, the horses we bring. I probably don't bring as many new horses in as others, and you know we're right and we're wrong, but you know our goal is to have a high strike rate, and the horses that we bring, that the majority of them have at least some level of success, and you know that we have two freshman horses this year. You know, Good Magic, who I believe is the only freshman sire with a grade one winner and had three stakes winners, and Army Mule just keeps ticking along, and their dirt and turf. You had a very impressive winner owned by Eric Johnson yesterday at Del Mar, and, yep. And who would have anticipated that their dirt as well as turf, and, you know, not to knock the horse, but, you know, he bred some males, manes and tails. I think he's got 21 winners and $1.5 million of progeny earnings, and still going. Another stakes winner at Laurel the other day. So, you know, it really feel good. It's all about, you know, the next horse and getting younger. And, you know, they're difficult to procure today because not only are they initially very expensive, the incentives and, quote, kickers are such that, you know, it's very hard to make a deal that you can live with, and then you can stand a horse at a fee that gives breeders a chance to succeed. And, you know, we don't do a lot of shuttling and those ancillary income opportunities. So, you know, it's sometimes frustrating, but, you know, markets ebb and flow, and opportunities present themselves when they do. And you just, you know, sort of and never know when those opportunities come about. So stay vigilant, pay attention, and stay current, and you know, maybe you buy three in the same year, maybe it's two seasons you don't get a new horse. So it's really important that the younger horses fill in, and as other stallions, you know, get on in years, you really need a follow up horse. And you know, it's hard to imagine you never have another Curlin, but certainly the goal is to you know, try to have the next classic, important, and influential sire.
On that topic, actually, let's take a minute, because, of course, just over the last, what, maybe 10 days ago, a week or so, the announcement on the fees, John. Any thoughts about the roster and you know, the kind of decision making people are literally involved in, you know, here essentially over the next 90 days when the Stallion Barns open?
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is I believe our horses are fairly priced. They all have success on the racetrack, and if you're trying to, you know, improve the value of the mare, your chances are enhanced by breeding to horses that get stakes winners. And certainly sales averages are important, but you know, a body of work and a resume of Grade One winners and champions and Breeders' Cup winners, I think those are the kind of horses that, you know, want to breed your mares to. And you know, I'm not saying that we're the only choice. There's a lot of good stallions out there, and I believe our roster competes and compares with the best of the best. And all respect to everybody. You know, there's a lot of importance, a lot of good sires, a few important sires, and we're fortunate some of them are on our roster.
I want to fold one part into this, because I do want to talk to you about the sale results as well as the racetrack results. And even before Keeneland started, John, on Sunday night, one thing that I mentioned to Sid Fernando when we were, you know, looking over the night of the stars, and then it also came to pass and really fruition in the subsequent days here at Keeneland. I noticed immediately that Charlatan, covering, you know, the mares that he had covered, were fetching elite prices.
So Charlatan is a horse that, in retrospect, we probably priced under the market. So, you know, he's a $50,000 horse, which, you know, we probably had, I don't know, we had hundreds of applications. He bred elite mares, and you know, you never know until it happens, but certainly people are buying mares in full to him and sending the kind of mares that show a confidence in and a predictability that they think he's going to be an important sire. So, you know, the word value is used a lot, but you don't see it a lot. And certainly in his case, I believe he represents great value. Again, I'm not a comparative guy, so I won't mention other horses just retired and what their fees are. But I think Charlton was, you know, putting Flight Line aside. You know, he had a brief but brilliant career. I think he was a better racehorse than horses that are retiring for twice the stud fee. And, you know, he was only beaten once in his life. And, you know, he'd had, I think, 7 or 8 month layoff. He ran 7/8 in California and just destroyed the field in a grade one. Then he flew across the world with just one easy prep, ran a mile and a quarter, made all the running, and Nick Scowen, some wonderful horses that tried him. You know, he put them all to bed and just got beat at the wire. So, you know, I think he's a horse of enormous ability. And, you know, Bob Baffert and those opinions that I respect completely would say that this is a superstar racehorse. As good as he is and as good as what he showed on the racetrack, I believe if he would have stayed in training another year, he would have proven himself the best horse in the world. So wonderful horse, great support. And we're excited about his first foals, and you know, we're already getting a great demand for the horse, and, you know, he'll be as popular in year two and as year three, and that's sort of one of our strategies in setting a fee. If you leave a little room and create a pent-up demand, it really helps fill you in the second year. And, you know, every horse in the second and third year, you have a little bit of a challenge, but he seems to be immune from any second-year slump as far as numbers of mares or people who want to breed to him. And the more you compare him to others, I think the stronger he stands up.
You know, and I actually have from Sunday, last Sunday, the Phasic sale, $875,000 selflessly that Berenstown bought. And that's interesting, John, because Berenstown bought Serene Melody too for 5 1/4. So they went for two different mares that were in foal to Charlatan. How about Jane Lyon paying $1 million for Proud Emma? And Woodford bought Message for $675,000. Clarkland Farm, $400,000 for Manhal. Here's My Lady Curlin that actually you sold to Coteau Grove, $550,000. I mean, the numbers were just eye-popping. Bridalwood also, looks like Bridalwood bought a couple of Tonalist Shape went that way. It just jumped off the page at me, John, how often his name was showing up with big six figures.
Yeah, very strong, and, you know, no disrespect to the mares sold, but his best mares were not sold. Like, I bred Guarana, you know, the kind of mares that we bred. I think I bred 23 of our very best mares to the horse, and, you know, arguably all those mares at auction would have made in excess of $1 million. So we believe in the horse. We've supported the horse, and, you know, everybody needs an heir apparent to your great sire, and, you know, we're supporting him as if he's got all the credentials to be that kind of horse.
Talking about Charlatan, John, what lessons are out there for us, you know, from this sale? Heavy interest and purchase power from international interests, which is not unusual. You know, basically raiding the, you know, the cookie jar to some extent, you know, the Shaddai and Mr. Yoshida and so forth. And, of course, the Magners, their interests. Talk a little bit about the marketplace here and also the weanling market, which seems to be vibrant.
I mean, I think while we sometimes critique the North American racehorse and people's perception of our breed, the fact remains that the base of great racetrack, you know, great racing and breeding interests throughout the world, their foundation lies in the American racehorse. And if you look at, you know, the Japanese with Sunday Silence and all the top mares that they buy, and, you know, Coolmore with Fairy Bridge, and, you know, they're really, the American thoroughbred is just such a dynamic, tough animal. Dirt converts to turf. There's so many great things about about our product on offer, and when, you know, the most successful people in the world continue to come and patronize our group. You know, look at Mariah Storm, and just there's just so many examples of great foundational families that were bought here in North America. It sort of stands for itself, and you know, it's all about quality. We're very fortunate to top the Fezzik Tipton sale and the Keeneland sale, and one was bought by Coolmore, and one was bought by the Yoshidas. So, you know, there you have two titans of the industry that both bought, you know, the best on offer, and will return to their country. So I think those results sort of speak for themselves, and the confidence that they have in the North American thoroughbred. And, you know, I guess there's really no lessons to be learned. I think everybody understands and knows that quality is what sells. And when you're lucky enough to have good clients, or lucky enough where people support your consignment, as, you know, we were supported at both sales, then that's what people are after. And the least important thing is what they cost. The most important thing is, do you sell or do you offer something that is as good as the elite of what they have at home? And you know, that's the continual challenge, to offer top quality. And you know, fortunately, we had Midnight Bassoon and Gamine, two wonderful horses this year, and they were received that well. As far as the wheeling market, you know, pinhookers and people that you know, want to raise it and sell a top yearling next year, they're looking for the ultimate in quality. Again, very few weanlings meet the criterion of the elite guys. They're extremely sharp in what they do. The weanling buying groups, and you know, if you're lucky enough to have one they love, then you're over the top. And if you're just under, you sell well. And if you're just under that, then it's a struggle. So be it fair or unfair, fair, realistic or not realistic, that is our market. Certainly the freshman sires, they go crazy for a good individual, you know, because they know that offered as yearlings, that those are premiumized. So we, you know, there's vibrancy across the market. I don't think there's a lot of deficit, other than, you know, middle-aged mares, or, you know, mares have had three or four foals and have not yet had one to the races. They're discriminated against and sort of punished. But that, you know, that trend has been moving that way over the last 5 to 7 to 8 years. So if anyone sees that as a surprise, they probably haven't been paying attention. So, you know, when you sell those kind of mares, you either stand back and let them sell, or you stay home and wait for the first foal to be a runner. And, you know, the younger they are, the more untested and exposed to the market they are, the more they make. And, you know, I think everybody has sort of those same experiences. And that's our market reality.
John, is there active recruiting that is going on? You know, we're constantly, you know, we see what Toba does, you know, trying to promote ownership, and obviously we, you know, a show like this, we talk about it to promote ownership. I, you know, Sid Fernando and I talk about breeding both to race and for commercial purposes, but is there an active recruiting to get people to, you know, to come into the business this way and become breeders? I mean, because you're hinting at what feels like a market opportunity, which is, you know, mares that are not yet producers but still have got probably, you know, a decade or more of potential production. And you know, we also need to, I think, put some mares into production cycle that, you know, that haven't been given a chance either. What is the solution to swinging the pendulum back when it comes to mares bred and the foal crop size?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what the answer to that. I would tell you that there's really, in my mind, there's no formal organization working on the recruitment of people's involvement in the business. Well, generally, there's advocacy groups for the business, but I think that takes on either an individual, you know, case where, you know, farms and breeders are trying to support what they do, or just sort of blindly somebody might have an attempt, gone to the Breeders' Cup, you know, said, gee, this is fun, I've evolved beyond fan and better, I'd like to have an investment, and then just coincidental probably if they call a specific farm, you know. But it's certainly one of the challenges, both owning racehorses and breeding racehorses, to recruit new owners and get people to do it. How that's done, I'm not sure. Probably the sport televised, publicized, and in people's minds, you know, just the sort of the presence of the business, just by enough people being aware of the business. I think that's probably the best chance we have to do it. I don't think, you know, there's really not a collective where if you're interested, call this number. And even if there were, then there would be probably issues about who would they call and how are they directed. And it's a very competitive business. So I'm not sure if that can be formally organized or done, or just sort of happens or organically. But yeah, it's certainly a challenge when you see six horse fields and you see it, you know, smaller and depreciating full crop as far as numbers. How do we get people involved? And I really believe there's an untapped potential. If you look at all of the, you know, the wealth and opportunity in this country to sort of spend your money on sport or sport business, the smallest fraction probably goes to our industry, and you know, it goes to a lot of other things. I mean, look at the equestrian business where millions are spent and they run for ribbons, you know.
Yeah.
At the end of one winter, successful racehorses, both male and female, have enormous value. So stand behind the business as a quote, in as an investment business, as well as a sport, a hobby, and something that you could love. You know? So it is a challenge, you know, when you have 80,000 people going to NFL games every weekend, and you know, we get 4,000 on a big day in some places. You know, it really begs the question: where are the fans, and why are there not more? More people hear it. That's been a trend, and you know, the trend presents a problem. I'm not sure that we've come up with a solution. If there is, I haven't yet seen it. I think promoting the business in a positive way, I think while there has been issues about the implementation of HISA and, you know, in some cases, you know, lack of horse people involved and sort of making decisions that prove to be problematic and not, excuse me, realistic. There'll be a redo of many of those, but, you know, a perception that we have a fair sport, we have a clean sport, a sport that takes care of the horses. I think that credibility issue is being attacked in a positive way. I'm maybe naive, but I'd be in the minority to think that a lot of it is hyperbole. A lot of it doesn't exist. It's usually the people that don't win or used to win, don't win anymore, that point the fingers at somebody else. But that being an aside, the average person, that credibility factor is probably, you know, to some degree a bit of a deterrent. I think that's being tackled. The welfare issue is being tackled. And if we can just present ourselves to, you know, excuse me, mass audiences, you know, on Saturdays and Sundays, you know, a lot of sports that were really not mainstream, NASCAR, et cetera, now have a huge following. So I think there's enormous potential for growth. You know, we were at the zenith, 30, 40, 50 years ago, every racetrack and every big day was sold out, and simulcasting made it easy to stay home and bet, which, you know, there's pluses and minuses to that.
But yeah.
I think a public exposure to large volumes of audiences would be really helpful if there was a national TV deal that was in prime time on a major network where people would see great horses competing at the highest level and to see the uniqueness, the love of the sport. I think that would help us now. Initially, you know, that's probably something you have to pay for. But over time, as your audience grows, it becomes a sponsorship event that, you know, that title and that product has a lot of value, you know, and you start talking to people like, you know, Coca-Cola and McDonald's and you know, mainstream advertisers that want to have some ownership of your product. But, you know, that grows over time. And is there somebody doing that? There's probably some groups that claim they're working on it. Whom they are and what they're really doing, I don't know. I tend to, when I look at something, look at results and look at high achievement rather than, you know, minor successes. So it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of work together to make that happen. And you know, I would say that most people would be in agreement that we have a factional industry that each thinks that they know how to do it or how the business should be expressed, and they sort of pursue their own goals and more of a collective and understanding that we're in this together is probably helpful. You know, I have a saying at the office that, you know, the bigger the pie is, the more you get to eat. So rather than worrying about the ingredients, let's make it as big as we can. That's not a critique of any organization, sure, or group. I think it's just a reality, and I think those numbers speak to all those things as being fact, not opinion. So, but I feel positive about the business. I feel positive about the sale that just happened at Breeders' Cup. I believe is a great event when held in Kentucky. There's a unique appreciation for the horse. There's a love of the sport that is probably unmatched in this country. So I'm a big fan and proponent of the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland. I think it sells farms, it sells the industry, it creates the best potential to have somebody be a long-term player in the industry versus going to the racetrack as somebody's guest and it was a good day and to never come back again, you know. So
yeah,
I think we can have a more durable effect on the industry when the Breeders' Cup is here.
Well, and certainly when it comes to Alapa, Hillendale, Atalapa, a absolute, you know, show place, and so many people out for open houses, John, and you know, here we are in, you know, decision-making time and you know, the opportunity to work with you and the team. So anybody, as we say, whenever, you know, Sid, when we do Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillendale, you couldn't be in better hands if you're looking to get involved in the game or, you know, make some decisions and want the, you know, the advice, the counsel of John and his team. John, I, you know, you were too busy, obviously, at last week to spend much time, but I couldn't let such a smashing Breeders' Cup and you know, what's been a great year for Hillendale, couldn't let it you know, draw near conclusion without a visit. So congratulations just on everything that's gone on and continued success.
Great, really appreciate it, and thanks for all the great work you do to promote racing and breeding and all sectors of the business, and we'll keep working hard and trying to stay relevant and trying to succeed, and looking forward to a 2024 season, which is everything. 23-4 comes right around the corner, so things move quickly here. I had COVID for a week, so I've been in bed, and yesterday,
no,
the first day I was up and around since after the Night of the Stars evening. So if I miss my days or my dates, I'm still coming around. So I slept for a week. It's hard to know what day it is.
So. Unbelievable. So a little bit of COVID fog. Well, and this has become the problem. You know, between big Saturdays and Breeders' Cup and any big gathering in the industry, there's always a few people that you know, are going to get a week in bed. Gosh, John, I hate to hear that.
Anyone thinks it's not real, I can tell you it is. I've had every vaccine made, and I still got it. But I'm good now. I'm cured. I'm out of quarantine, feeling good, optimistic. looking forward, and we'll start working on our meetings for next year, and I think we'll push reset and start all over again.
I love it. HillandDaleFarms.com, everybody. HillandDaleFarms.com. John Sikora, as always, a pleasure. And I got to mention, you know, your son, who I ran into like five different times in September and now this past week, he's coming up fast behind you. I'm so impressed with him.
I could use the help. he is the one thing that you need. He's got a love and enthusiasm for the game.
Yeah,
it all came from within. I guess I didn't push him away, but I didn't embrace his involvement. So it has to be you, because there's tough times, and even on your worst day, you have to be happy that's the decision you made. So he went away to school and came back, and he's going to UK. He didn't like Miami of Ohio, wanted to be close to everything, and he worked with Todd Pletcher, and you know, he's friends with Fincher, and he's starting to meet people and gather around and get around. He does have an agenda, just a love for it, and hopefully he'll find his way and succeed in a tough but great business.
The next generation, just like you know, a son of Curlin, and you know, like Good Magic, and you gotta bring him up in behind you.
But I'm gonna call him Good Magic for good luck.
I love it, John. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
John Sikora, everybody, and I mean, he's. He's really one of a kind, and what he's done, the decisions, you know, that he makes, and he'd be the first to admit not every call has been perfect, but he's just one of the real minds that looks around, can see around corners. As we used to say at Proctor, I'm sure they still say it. Yeah, you can, the ability to see around a corner. John Sikora, Hill and Dale. We've got about 20 plus minutes, give or take, and looking forward to finally. We kept trying to get Papo, and couldn't get to him. And last week was a blur, and then I lost Friday, which I hate. Under any circumstance, when we're still in the shadow of, you know, something big and like a Breeders' Cup, like Triple Crown, whatever it might be, you miss any number of, you know, topics and conversations. So we'll keep playing catch up this week and move toward Thanksgiving, which is always a great race weekend, the holiday weekend, and say good morning to Papo Morales, Amwager, and Form to Win. Papo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
It's good to catch up, and like I said earlier with Tom Law, and we're going to have a few of these. I haven't talked to the DRF guys much yet, Grenig and Marcus Hirsch and Marty McGee, so I'll ask everybody this week. But most importantly, let's review some of the very successful Form to Win snapshots into Breeders' Cup, because there were a lot of good insights. And as usual, Papo, some of the favorites that were pushed down in the analysis, they failed to come to fruition. And that's as valuable as finding, you know, a price that's going to run well.
Yes, the top horse from a payout perspective, which is a race that I did not bet, but we posted online the Form to Win, was Caravelle, who was ranked second on
that was the one,
and I just passed on that race altogether. Enjoyed watching it, but then was kind of kicking myself that I didn't have something on that sort of price horse. But yeah, Form to Win found her. She was ranked second. All you had to do was take your filter between 5 and 5.5 on the turf, and she was ranked second no matter how well you ran it. So that was successful. And then the favorite that was really pushed down was Nest. Nest was really pushed down on Form to Win and then I keyed off Blue Stripe. So that kind of saved the weekend, honestly, because there were two main plays for me. One was I like Pogo and that turf mile, which turned in for home. I was getting a little bit excited, but he faded, so nothing there. But then had Blue Stripe and kind of played around with her and everything, back wheeled her in the exact end of try. So that paid for the weekend. And but Ness was moved down. Malafat was prominent in Clairière, so that was the big one for me. And then in the Classic, which I wasn't going to play, I had a friend text me before the race and say, how are you going to make money on this race? And the three horses on Form to Win were Flightline, Olympiad, and Taba. And we also put that one out on Twitter. So the key to that race was Olympiad in second, which is how I played it. And the exact actually paid quite good for a 2-5 favorite in the first position. So all in all, a good weekend. One of my better Breeders' Cups, Steve.
Well, and the lesson here, and it's more than a lesson, because we certainly presented the whole, each year we do this. I mean, it was not unique to the 22 Breeders' Cup. But the reality is that it only takes one, I mean, ideally one or more, but one or two hits and even minor successes, of course, depends on what your approach is. But even the minor pops that keep you afloat and, waiting for the big hit to come, it doesn't take a lot, because the size of these fields essentially, guarantee inflated payoffs, and as opposed to the inverse, which is week to week racing, where smaller fields make it hard, and that just plays out every year in this event.
Yeah, and there was no reason why, Steve, we always talk about watching the board. There's no reason that I'm happy that he went off at his price, but there's no reason that Olympiad should have gone off at, he went off at 26-1. I mean, he fit on every figure that you look at. If you looked at the sheets, he was capable of a four. He fit on Briz. He fit on, Bayer. He fit on Form to Win. So he kind of got lost on the board there. And that was the key to that particular race. It's unfortunate that Epicenter got hurt. Nobody wanted to see that. I assume he would have run a heck of a lot better. But in this case, Olympiad was 26-1. Flightline was just the best horse. And I mean, despite Life is Good, I wouldn't say pack it in down the stretch. I mean, he ran honorably, but if Flightline was not in this race, you could make a case that Life is Good. I mean, some people say he didn't want a mile and a quarter, but he could have done what Nick Sko did a couple years ago. So it was the year of Flightline, Steve. And Life is Good had an incredible career, and it was a little dirtied up with his last loss, but all in all, he had a good career also.
Well, and I just got back to the posting, and you mentioned Blue Stripe. Some people are going to say, well, it was only because Mike Welch. No, Blue Stripe was third under the analysis, under the the way in which the race came up, and in fact, the four horse try box search results, Clairière, Blue Stripe, and Malathat was laid right out there. Essentially, Papo, when you look at these snapshots, when you see a horse that doesn't belong, technically, quote unquote, doesn't belong based on the cumulative, let's say, the consensus analysis, and they show up in these snapshots, that's telling. And so for Caravelle to be sitting there between Golden Pal and Campanelle, that should have said something. And same thing, Blue Stripe, and the fact, like you say, Nest was rated sixth under the algorithm. Nest was pushed down, and there were plenty of people. I mean, those of you that listen regularly to Nick Tamaro, Nick made it very clear that Nest, in his mind, that this was the opportunity to play against her. I mean, that's what That's frankly what this event does better than any other. It gives you the opportunity to, you know, to take a stand, and whether it's, you know, for a price and keying one, or whether it's against a certain horse that, you know, that just seems like the right horse by everybody's, you know, by the way in which everybody is seeing the race coming up.
Yeah, and Blue Stripe, I think, I don't know why she went off at the price that she did. I mean, maybe a lack of recency, but her last race out west was good. No matter how you looked at it, she fit on the rags. You know, she doesn't have a trainer that has a super barn, so, you know, people a lot of times they bet the top trainers with the name, but she fit. And then Mike Walsh gave her that huge positive endorsement very early in the week. I was very happy. I would have been a little happier if she won. Had a sizable win.
So would have Mike. Mike would have been too.
it was a very good week, and it could have been outstanding. I'll take it. She ran honorably. Is she coming back, Steve? I know she sold.
She sold. I have not heard what the Narvik. Let me jot that down, and we'll find out what we can about.
I think we need to keep a running list of who's coming back, because every time I look at something, it seems somebody else. I saw where Aloha West was.
He's going to stand at Millridge.
So we got several that I guess next year for a classic division, Taba. We'll see who else, you know, stands out. I mean, Charge It, I'm still expecting some big things from him if he can ever get back to the track.
He's got to stay healthy. That's the one. You know, shouldn't we also mention, Wonder Wheel was part of the picture on Friday, and
Friday in that Thoroughbred Ethicare Alliance. If you set your filter between 11 and 12, it had next over Haywood's Beach. I mean, cold on average form to win time. So that was That was a good play Friday. And then like you said, the Wonder Wheel we put out there. But I think those were the two big plays for Friday.
Well, and by the way, I'm sort of burying the lead a little bit. We got to thank everybody at AmWager and at Form to Win for another year. This was our third running of the Breeders' Cup Betting Companion from the At the Races team, essentially. And I'm sure everybody that saw my frantic updates and tweeting. Thanks, Papo, to everybody at Form to Win and AmWager for helping us put it together, because the guys did just an unbelievable job from every standpoint. Even not every ticket suggestion cashed, but between the Long Shot Lad and Hammer and Seth and Joe Bianca and Dick Powell's Turf Insights, the guide absolutely pointed people in the right direction. So thanks so much.
And we appreciate all of them too, Steve. I mean, it takes time to do those write-ups, and we appreciate their sharing their opinions. And it was free for everybody, which is great.
Now, I've done this 3 years in a row, and it makes for some frantic work Saturday, Sunday, Monday. By the time, because we, one thing that we'd like to do is basically get it out there with the numbers and you know, post draw, so that you don't have to go back and revise it and have things be chopped up. So as late as Tuesday night and even Wednesday morning before the show, I was sending changes, and I got to mention the team that handles our website, John Catuzzo and Gatman down in South Florida that does our work. John did just an amazing job, frankly, because I was firing off. I'm not as good an editor as Johnny D was, but I was sending changes and little nuancy things to make sure that the information was presented as correctly as possible, so that people didn't have to do backflips to build their tickets. So thanks to
them. It was a great effort all around, Steve, from everybody involved.
Well, and that got a nice leisurely visit with you, too. Let's also talk about what's ahead. I mean, it's been a big year, Papo, and obviously the reworking and this not a relaunch, but the refashioned interface. Talk about what people should look forward to and as we kind of look toward the end of the year.
Yeah. So the next big thing, Steve, I'll be working on is I've got to find a way. And I think I've got the math behind it for the algorithm. So the European horses coming over for Breeders' Cup, they're always ranked lower on form to win because
we're taking
their times over in Europe, given the ground they were running on is much softer, so they're not running technically as fast, given the clock. So one of my programmers, Steve, is flying over from Australia, so I'll meet him at Arizona, the symposium, and we're going to sit down and see if we can make some adjustments so that the average user doesn't have to think, do the calculations in their head or say this horse is going to run faster on fast ground. We need to find an equalizer there for these Euros. So that's what I'm going to be working on. We're also still working on the pace calculator that's going to be graphically shown. So we're going to build that into the app. So we still got a lot of things to work on. Always busy, that's for sure.
Well, and it's so funny that you zeroed in on that, and it invariably has been the biggest challenge from a handicapping standpoint, not just limited either, Papo, to Breeders' Cup opportunities, but throughout the year, whenever the Euros come to Woodbine, when they've come the last few years to compete in this turf triple in New York, whatever it might be. The interpretation of their performances. Jerry Brown at Thoroughgraph, Jerry has worked tirelessly to improve his scale, and that's been an area that that he felt was key. For a game that has become more and more international in nature, and. I can tell you, as somebody that has looked at Thoroughgraph for years, I mean that has been something, not just when we look at, let's say, the Dubai World Cup. I mean, Jerry makes figures for that too, and you try to figure out what does this mean. It's very challenging, and especially when you're looking at these multiple entries. I thought particularly when it came to figuring out how to parse. I mean, I preferred Tuesday, and she was my pick in the filly and mare turf. But then there was Nashua and Above the Curve. And it was interesting because there were people that said, well, you got to use Nashua and Above the Curve. And then there was a whole school that thought that Nashua was a cut below and could be played against. I mean, being able to make those kinds of decisions in that, in a race like that, makes a huge difference. There were people that found Emiratiana who were heartbroken that she didn't get to Caravelle in the turf sprint. So this is an area that could be a real difference maker.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's funny, Steve, we have the ability on Form to Win to just look at races on good, soft, or yielding. And if you click those buttons, then the Europeans all move up and the Americans are pushed down, but it's not really an equalizer. I'm going to work on that myself and hope to come up with that calculation. And then I'm also very interested, Stephen, going back and look at charts, because I had texted you before Friday about the wins on Breeders' Cup Day. And I'm interested to see horses that were running into that and didn't have cover coming out, if that affected their performance. So I'm going to be following that closely. That may be a good angle or it may not, but I'm interested to see if horses that were running into that, because I know the headwinds on the backstretch were much stronger.
Oh yeah.
So I'm curious to see if there's an option to make some money on a horse that kind of faded, turning for home, just didn't have anything left. So that'll be something I'll be following too.
Well, and we discussed that leading in, and I reached for Jerry because it happens to be wind is a factor when he builds his figures, and you know, the general thinking is that headwind will impact front runners and benefit, and the tailwind benefits closers. I mean, that's the general rule of thumb. One thing that occurs to me too, Papo, and I don't know if it's an easy, I guess it would be something you could do manually. And generally, I'm going to guess that this is going to be a suggestion that would only apply to Breeders' Cup when there's that many horses coming over and there's that many potentially in a field. Like, for instance, you here's the mile. And so there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There were 6 of the 14 were imports. Modern Games, Kinross, Malavath, Order of Australia, Pogo. Now, of course, Order of Australia had run, you know, Keeneland in the prep, and Dream Loper. Is manually, can you exclude the North American horses and just get a ranking on the Euros in the spot?
Now you can. You would just have to take them out manually by clicking on every performance that horse has had. So we have the ability in Form to Win to take out individual performances for horses, because a lot of times horse doesn't break as well, it kind of affects their number. So I go back and take those out. The user has the ability to just click edit, you go back, you take out the past performance that you don't want to look at, and then it redoes the calculation. Now, if you wanted to do that for every American, you would have to go through every American's last 10 races and basically exclude them. But it would not be very hard to make a button, just click all, and you could take out every one of their past forms if you really wanted to isolate just on a couple of horses. So I'll take that advice to the developers and see what we can do, Steve.
I'm just curious because if you can't integrate, at least right now, if you can't integrate the Euro performance levels with the North American runners, then at least get a idea of a ranking, you know, of the Euros, where you could then, you know, you could then see potentially that Nashua is not as attractive as, I mean, in this case, Nashua actually ran okay. I mean, she was fourth, beaten, what, three and a half lengths for everything, and above the curve, underperformed, it seemed, based on, you know, some of the handicapping that I was seeing and hearing. But I, yeah, that's just sort of one of those pop in the head kinds of things. I mean, if I can't know how the Euros compete, you know, in an integrated fashion, then let me at least know, you know, which ones are elevated. I mean, honestly, I've said this. People are probably sick of hearing it. I found what I thought was maybe the best horse at the best price of the entire weekend in Malavath, and all she has to do is break a little more cleanly, and Gaffleone probably gets third with her at the least, and I've had, you know, a mammoth weekend. It's that simple. So that's the kind of interesting element of this. I mean, any kernel that helps you, you know, grab a hold of something juicy, that's all it takes for Breeders' Cup weekend.
That's true, Stephen. I will say this, now that I think about it more, even if we were comparing the Euros based off the ground they were running overseas, there's just so many different types of good versus soft. So when you're playing Australia, there's 8 different listings for their turf rating that's rated good. It can be G3, G4, S5, S6, S7, H8 is heavy, H9 is heavy, and H10. So there's eight different ground types of moisture, the amount of moisture in the ground. Now, we don't have that here in the U.S.
No.
We typically just have firm. But that's why I've got to work on that calculation, because even if you're comparing an S5 soft to an S7 soft, one, you're going to sink more in the ground than the other, which is going to affect your speed. So I got to do some work on that. It's I need strong coffee and a lot of time. It's not hard if I can figure out how much the calculation needs to be, the algorithm needs to improve those performances, given that that horse we're running on firm. So I'll get my head around it. It's going to require a little thought, but I like doing these experiments, so it'll be fun.
Well, you've done tremendous work, and week, month after month, the Form to Win product gets more and more useful and easier to manipulate for those of you that are already involved with it and have made it part of your handicapping. And of course, it's integrated right into the M-Wager interface. But otherwise, download and have it at your fingertips. And especially if you're looking to play and on the fly, because you're going to find things. You'll find things like Caravelle and Blue Stripe and more. So, Papo, I appreciate it. Well done. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I appreciate your time, and I'll talk to you later.
You got it. We'll talk Friday, do some handicapping. Papo Morales, everybody, M-Wager and Form to Win. It's the race day. It's Monday, and as we told you earlier, when Callie Francois joined us, there's action today. Pretty cool. Monday right here at Laurel. You also got Horseshoe, of course, Indianapolis. You got Remington running today. And Finger Lakes, right? Got about half a dozen, I think. Mahoning, Mountaineer, Parks, Turf Paradise, Will Rogers, and Zia. There's your Monday lineup. I want to thank Callie and thank Tom Law, Mig, Steve Lehman, John Secura, and Papo. Good luck if you're playing, everybody. Replay 6 to 9, and back with you tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, at the races. Talk to you then.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping,